As you know, beloved listeners, this program has been preoccupied with the ever-evolving and rising threat of nuclear war for decades. But for obvious reasons, we've felt increased anxiety in the last 12 months. It will bring you no comfort to learn that the current stock of nuclear weapons held by the USA alone is sufficient to obliterate several Earth-sized planets. It will perhaps make you even more anxious to know that Trump is making plans not only to increase the size of the arsenal, but also to make it, and I quote, more usable. And according to my next guest, current global tensions are making the possibility of nuclear escalation more likely than ever, and not just in North Korea. Michael Clare is Professor of Peace and World Security Studies at Hampshire College, and he's also the defence correspondent for that admirable organ, The Nation. And he joins us from Massachusetts. Michael, welcome to our little wireless program.
I'm so happy to talk with you.
Now, let me remind you of a particularly ominous tweet from your president, dating to last November. Quote, "The United States must greatly strengthen and expand its nuclear capability until such time as the world comes to its senses regarding nukes." I take it this sentiment is reflected in administration policy?
The administration is now engaged in a nuclear posture review, an NPR, and this sentiment is going to guide that review. The review will determine what kind of weapons the United States will have in its arsenal in the coming decades and under what circumstances they might be used. So it's the guiding principles that I worry about. And what I worry about is this sentiment, this outlook will make for a greater readiness to contemplate the use of nuclear weapons. I worry less about the numbers than I worry about the inclination to use them.
Michael, how often are these nuclear posture reviews reviewed? I presume every president does one.
Yes. Well, there's no systematic procedure to do it, but it seems that every administration does them at least once. And these are reviews of the arsenal itself, what kind of weapons we're going to have, what weapons we may want to procure, but also of the doctrine that governs the actual use, the circumstances under which these weapons will be used. And so both are being reconsidered, and from what we could tell, the Trump NPR, Nuclear Posture Review, is going to be very different from that of President Obama's.
We might backtrack to Obama's later, but I'd like you to tell me who or what the Defense Science Board is.
Oh, the Defense Science Board is a group of individuals who are appointed by the Secretary of Defense to provide advice and consultation on major matters. They report to the Secretary of Defense.
So they have influence but not power.
They have influence. They're not in the chain of command, as we would say. They don't have power, as you say, but they have influence.
I'm talking to Michael Clare, who is, it's a wonderful title, Professor of Peace and World Security Studies at Hampshire. Now, let us deal with this ominous term, usable nuke.
Well, usable means not in terms of its technological capabilities. Usable means under what circumstances would the President of the United States or some other leader order the use of a weapon? Under what circumstances would this be?
Doesn't it also hint at smaller nuclear weapons or nuclear weapons perhaps with the capacity to be tuned back a little?
Well, exactly right. Under the doctrine of the Obama administration, the policy was very clear. We would have tried to avoid using nuclear weapons under any circumstances. What I fear is under the Trump policy, the notion would be that we would use these earlier in a conflict at a lower level of violence, that we would use smaller nuclear weapons in response to battlefield conditions, making them more usable, in quotations, as a response to battlefield conditions, rather than to save them exclusively for deterrence against nuclear attack, which was the older policy.
Now, Obama released his NPR in 2010, and it was the basis of a non-proliferation agenda throughout his presidency. But he still began planning for a multi-decade modernization of the nuclear arsenal.
That's right. In order to get support for his non-proliferation policy, he had to promise the generals that he would not allow American weapons to become obsolete. So he set the groundwork for replacing existing weapons, which are now 20, 30 years old, with new ones down the road. I think he hoped that if Hillary Clinton got elected, that it would not be necessary to replace all of them, that there would be new arms control agreements, disarmament agreements, that some of these would not actually be replaced one by one. But it now turns out that it's likely that they'll be replaced and improved and modernized and increased in numbers under the Trump administration.
I'm old enough to remember the time when one of the arguments for nuclear armaments was that they were considerably cheaper than maintaining vast armies. But, of course, we should look at the phenomenal costs of these things. How much is Trump's nuclear program likely to cost?
Yes. Well, we know from the Congressional Budget Office, an arm of Congress, that the estimated cost is $1.2 trillion, not accounting for inflation, which is bound to push the number up. Now, that is the replacement figure of the Obama plan, which is one by one, that one-for-one replacement of intercontinental ballistic missiles, submarine missiles, and strategic bombers. We don't know what the Trump replacement plan will be. If he seeks to increase those numbers, then of course the cost will go much up from there.
And of course it'll mean budget cuts elsewhere, perhaps health, education, infrastructure, or fighting the drug epidemic.
Any of those. And I do not know how they could possibly finance all of this, particularly with the tax cuts that the Trump administration hopes to push through Congress.
That apparently will also involve another $1 trillion blowout. Now, okay, in June we were discussing the treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons as it was being debated at the UN. It's safe to say that expanding this treaty beyond the 53 current signatories is an illusion.
I fear that that's the case. I'm sure that other states that do not currently possess nuclear weapons will join the treaty, and I certainly hope that's the case. But I do not see that the United States will join the treaty, and if Donald Trump proceeds with this rearmament plan or expansion plan, certainly Russia will follow, China will follow, and this will signal to other countries with nuclear ambitions to proceed down that path. So it certainly is going to make it harder to achieve success with the Nuclear Prohibition Treaty.
But you've also pointed out that outright prohibition isn't the only objective of the treaty. Quote, equally vital, the drive to establish an international legal norm against the use of nukes, akin to the existing norms against landmines, cluster munitions, biological and chemical weapons.
Yes, yes, and that is why so many of us are champions of this treaty. It does set an international norm against the use of nuclear weapons, which is why, Philip, I'm so distressed about this trend that we see towards lending greater usability, in quotation marks, to the use of nuclear weapons, giving them greater legitimacy, making it more easy for decision makers to use them in a crisis situation. This is a very distressing trend and certainly should be opposed.
Just in June, there we were feeling quite hopeful because of the treaty, and suddenly that hope is snuffed out. We're listening to Michael Clare, LNL on RN, on your digital radio and online. Michael is Professor of Peace and World Security Studies at Hampshire and the Defence Correspondent for The Nation. Michael, we've spent a great deal of time dwelling on the possibilities of a nuclear confrontation with North Korea, but you've raised concerns about the military buildup in the Baltic.
Yes, I very much worry about a number of conceivable nuclear flashpoints, but that's top on my list, other than the Korean Peninsula. That certainly is the most dangerous at this moment. But the Baltic region comes close, and the reason for that is that both sides, NATO on one hand, the Russians on the other hand, believe that a nuclear confrontation is possible, that it's conceivable that the West that will go to war with Russia, there'll be a clash there for some reason, and that will escalate very rapidly to a high intensity conventional war, and that one side or the other, facing the possibility of defeat, will resort at a very early stage to the use of tactical nuclear weapons. This is what we were talking about earlier. And that will then ignite a escalatory cycle that'll lead to all-out nuclear war.
Before I fumbled an attempt to describe a new sort of nuclear weapon that I've seen in your writings, and that's a bomb where it can in fact be turned down. In other words, its megaton rating can, in the moment of use, be dialed back.
Yes, there are a number of those in the U.S. arsenal. The B-61 bomb is one of those, where you can set the level of destructive capacity from, if we use Hiroshima, which was about a 10 kiloton bomb, about equivalent to 10,000 tons of TNT, you could set this bomb to have a higher destructive capacity than that or a lower capacity. Now, the argument for this is not that we're going to use these. The argument for these is that if we set them at a low level, it will deter the Russians from using similar weapons, and it's hard for me to describe this because I think it's all insane.
Well, it sounds absolutely mad, and I'm not using that term in the old meaning of mutual assured destruction. You also point out that there's a chance that some of the missiles that America might hypothetically launch might not even have a nuclear warhead. But how would the target nation know? Their response would very likely to be the assumption that it is nuked.
Yes, this is a big complaint against one of the proposed weapons that that is in the new program, the new plan for replacing existing weapons that President Trump is likely to approve. It's an advanced air-launched cruise missile, ALCM, that would be either would be dual use, as they say, either a conventional warhead or a nuclear warhead. And as you say, a country at the receiving end, presumably Russia, would have no way of knowing whether they're being attacked with conventional weapons or nuclear weapons.
They'd get a pretty good idea, of course, if they were monitoring Trump's tweets. Okay. Now, another area of concern you raise is Trump's irrational hatred of the Iran deal.
Oh, yes. This is a terrible worry for anyone who cares about world peace and stability, in my mind. He seems determined to wreck this agreement for no other reason other than President Obama signed it or approved it. He's determined to wreck it. And this, I fear, could lead to another nuclear arms race in the Middle East. And that would be horrific if that were to happen. And, you know, the most recent news is in this country is that Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, may be on his way out and would be replaced by Mike Pompeo, who is even more determined to wreck the Iran nuclear deal. And I just think that that would be so bad.
There's also the possibility that the U.S. and Israel, either alone or together, could attack Iranian nuclear and military facilities, thus sparking a regional conflagration.
Well, that would be under the assumption that the Iran nuclear deal is torn up and that the U.S. reimposes sanctions on Iran. That's the threat, that the U.S. will go back to sanctions. And the Iranian leadership will feel they have no reason not to resume their uranium enrichment program, which they abandoned under the existing nuclear agreement. They abandoned their program. But if the U.S. reimposed sanctions, they may say, why shouldn't we go back to where we were? And under those circumstances, I could see the U.S. and or Israel launching attacks on Iran. And I think there are many in Washington and in Israel who are rooting for that outcome.
The Baltic, North Korea, the Middle East. For a bloke whose autobiography is titled Art of the Deal, the Donald seems entirely averse to negotiation when it comes to nukes. Where could, might, de-escalation begin?
We know the answer to that. It just requires a inclination to proceed down that path. In the case of North Korea, I think the path is pretty obvious. China has proposed an interim understanding whereby North Korea would cease its testing of long-range missiles and nuclear weapons in return for an agreement on the part of the United States to cease its aggressive military exercises in the Korean Peninsula area, a freeze for a freeze. I think that would be a very good way to proceed because North Korea does not yet possess can't be sure that it could attack the United States with a nuclear-tipped ICBM. It can, and so stopping testing now would be a very good move. That would be advantageous. This would not be a final solution. It would just be an interim step. And I would just wish that the U.S. would embrace that proposal.
Moved, Michael, seconded, Philip. That was Professor Michael Clare in Massachusetts, and Michael's most recent book, The Race for What's Left, The Global Scramble for the World's Last Resources, published by Picador. Thanks for your time, Michael.
It's been a pleasure talking to you on these important topics. Thank you.